Hello, my name is Stephanie Youngers. Today is November 12th, 2010, and I'm interviewing Mr. Ed LaRue here at the Museum of Seminole County History. How are you today?
I'm fine today.
Good. We would like to begin about asking where and when you were born.
I was born in Gloversville, New York, upstate New York, in May of 1939.
And how did you make your way into the Florida area?
My dad and mother moved from New York to New Jersey during World War II, and he was in the Coast Guard. And my mother inherited some property in Central Florida at the end of the war when her uncle died. And we came down to seek it out. We sold a little farm in New Jersey and loaded things on a truck like the Okies going to California and came to Florida with no turning back. And we didn't like the property. My mother didn't like it. It was rattlesnake infested, but we decided to stay because we liked Florida.
Oh, good. And about how old were you?
I was five years old.
You've been here a long time then.
Since I was five.
You might as well be a native.
I wish I could claim the other 5 years.
So, whereabouts did you live when you
moved to Winter Park.
Oh, okay.
Winter Park.
So, wow. Yeah. Do you have like memories of Winter Park?
Oh, yes.
As far as the way it looked?
Oh, absolutely. There were wooden sidewalks on two blocks at Winter Park. Just like a Little House in the Prairie, you know, out in West, and that TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Wooden sidewalks, you'd clop along, you know, and then they were torn down about a year or two later to make way for a bank. But it was a frontier town.
Really?
All the old cars were still around. People came for the winters and went back up north in the summers, and a couple of garages close to Park Avenue and Winter Park. You could see the old Pierce Arrows and Cadillacs and Packards that were there.
Wow.
They take the train back north and leave the car here for the next winter.
Oh.
So it was a sleepy, beautiful little town in those days.
Oh, wow. Well, it's still a pretty little town.
Still is.
It definitely has gotten much larger.
Yes, regrettably.
Did they have any kind of like local gatherings or events or anything in Winter Park that you attended? Or
one of the first things I remember are fish fries.
Oh.
They had mullet fish fries. The Lions Club put them on. They'd bring concrete blocks to the grammar school playground and put wooden planks on top for tables and concrete blocks and wooden planks for benches. And they'd cook this mullet. They'd deep fry this mullet. You could smell it a block away. And it was delicious.
And it was a whole town event that everybody attended?
Well, it could have been a town event. Anybody could come and pay maybe $1 for the dinner. And the Lions Club put it on about three or four times a year, and everybody came. They strung lights on the playground.
Oh.
Those naked yellow lights, you know, the bulbs,
mm-hmm.
and a little music in the background, and it was tremendous.
Oh, very
the
neat.
Old fish fries, yeah.
So the schools that you attended, was it this
Winter Park
school?
Elementary, which is part of Rollins College today? Well, it's torn down now, but old Winter Park Elementary and Winter Park High School. It was built in 1923, went all through public schools there.
Mm-hmm.
And loved it dearly. It was a great town.
Oh,
great
good.
Town. Nobody locked their houses or their cars. Literally.
Wow.
Literally didn't.
You can't do that now.
No, you can't do that now.
No. So, did you go to college from here? Or?
I went in the Army right after high school and got out fairly soon. I had a low period of time. Went to Stetson University, up in DeLand, about 40 miles away, and went to DeLand and graduated with a history degree there, went on to law school, and moved back to Orlando and Winter Park, and been in that area ever since.
And you still live there now?
I live in Winter Springs,
which
is close, it's north,
but
that whole area has been my home for the longest time. When I give speeches, they say I'm a native when I'm introduced, but I can't claim that first 5 years in the South.
Sure you
but
can.
I wish I could.
Well, did you work as an attorney when you came back?
No,
or?
No. I never practiced law at all. I dropped out before I was through. There was a lady there. I fell in love with her, and we both didn't like the law that much for some strange reason, and we both dropped out, and we were married just under 40 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
She passed away in 03
of
cancer, but we had a long life together.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good. Did you, what did you do as far as a career and things?
I was in the insurance business.
Okay.
I had an insurance agency. I had a nationwide insurance agency. And I never liked business particularly because I was trained as a historian, and I always wished that I'd been closer to that. And now, in late in life, in my 60s and 70s, I'm a public lecturer mm-hmm. on a myriad of Florida topics, and I write books. I've written 15 books, mm-hmm. and I'm doing what I should have done as a younger man. And late in life, I'm able to do what I wish I had done earlier, so it's kind of nice.
So you're writing books, is just a passion you always have?
Yes, I had a joint major in at Stetson, history and English. And I always wanted to write books. I always wanted to write books about Florida, novels. And in my insurance career, which was somewhat boring, I hate to say that, but it wasn't really a stimulating thing for me. I had a family to raise, kids to raise, and I went through it and did it and was able to accomplish it, but the fire was not in the furnace. Mm-hmm. And my dad saw that melancholic view when I was in my early 40s and said, why don't you dust off your pencil and pen and write again like you did in college? Because in college I wrote for the paper and wrote feature articles for the DeLand Sun News up in Stetson at DeLand. Mm-hmm. And one day I was out walking on a field and I saw a story. It just came to me. And I wrote it, and I wrote a second, a third, a fourth, and took them down to Rollins College to a friend of my dad's who was in the English department, and he thought they were very good, and my career was launched.
So you've been doing this now since you were in your 40s?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, over 20 years.
Well, very nice. Yeah, yeah. And when you do public lectures and things, what do you talk about?
I have a slate of about 35 topics, mm-hmm. All aspects of Florida history.
Okay.
Current, old history, Civil War, the Seminole Indian Wars, many of the industries, citrus, cattle, timber, the early founders, the early explorers, the Treasure Coast. Over 30 lectures I've crafted and researched and deliver all around and do all.
And you do them
places.
At the local colleges?
I do a college level, civic clubs, retirement centers, private organizations, business enrichment for companies that want to enrich their employees with a lecture, all kinds of ways and things.
Okay.
I'm doing that now and currently in retirement, and I love it.
Well, you said you were married, and you mentioned you have children.
Yes.
So
yes.
Do you have a special courtship story or anything, how you want to?
Yes, I do,
you?
As a matter of fact. Funny you'd ask that. It's not staged, but I'll never forget it. We were in law school together, mm-hmm. and I had noticed her because there were three women in the law school, and the rest were men. And she cut a pretty nice figure, and I had noticed her early on. And we had never spoken. We'd seen each other, and she'd noticed me, and I had noticed her, and we were both freshmen. Mm-hmm. She'd come in a semester before me, and I'd come in on the off semester. And, maybe 2 or 3 weeks had gone by, and I'd heard that everybody was dating her, and then I found out that nobody was. It was just a rumor. And we sat next to each other on a bench before a class. The first words she said to me were, I wonder what color eyes our children will have.
Oh, my.
Just like that. Just like that. And for once in my life, I was speechless. Mm-hmm. She said it just like that.
Wow.
And the answer was blue and brown, but not on the same child. So we had a son and a daughter, and they were brown-eyed and blue-eyed. Oh. The first thing she ever said to me. So that I guess that's a courtship story, isn't it?
It was very forward, and that's right.
That's exactly what she said.
That's awesome.
I wonder what color eyes our children will have.
That's very good.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. That's awesome. And do you have any special family, like heirlooms or keepsakes or anything that, you know, do your kids share your passion for history? And
Not particularly. That's strange. They don't. My wife was trained as a journalist. Mm-hmm. And I had the English major and the history and did writing along with the English major. We both were writers. She wrote in industry. My son is a entrepreneur of sorts. He's a very successful businessman. He went to Georgia State on a tennis scholarship, mm-hmm. and was an excellent student all the way along. And he operates and owns a company.
Oh, okay.
And he's a businessman and a coach, coaches mm-hmm. his daughters, my granddaughters, in lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And he's steeped in the business world, but also with his church mm-hmm. and philanthropic things also. But he likes history, but not the same passion that I have.
Right.
My daughter is in the insurance business, similar to what I did for a long, long time. I think mine was 27 years, something like that. And she's got two children. My son has two children. She's too busy to read much about history. So I don't think, even though they're smart children and they were exceptional in school, I don't think they have that historic bent.
Right.
That happens a lot, you mm-hmm. know. But they're both successful in their own right, and I'm happy about that.
You all lived in Winter Park for a long time, and do you remember any of like the historical events that happened? Like,
yes, I do. A couple I can mention. The Rollins College had a very close union with Winter Park. They were joined at the hip, and they loved each other, and they just cooperated all the way through. It was wonderful to see. Rollins had something called the Animated Magazine. Mm-hmm. Where people would come and speak and tell their life story or a portion thereof, and some of the greatest notables of the age came, and I would sell newspapers there as a young boy in mm-hmm. my teens and even younger, 10, 11, 12, 13. And I saw some great people, James Cagney, Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings, the writer, Mary Bethune, the educator, all kinds of people from all walks of endeavor, and that made a great impression on me because I knew these people. I knew some of their plaudits and some of their successes, and yet I could see them speak from a stage. Mm-hmm. And here I was scurrying around trying to write, sell newspapers there. And they held it every winter in one of the months without a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. We held it outdoors in February, and it was usually cool. And I remember in the early days when I was just a little boy, the women and men would come all decked out. Women would wear hats, you know, all women wear hats until somewhere in the 40s, 50s, I guess it was. And they wear their fox stoles with the little beaded eyes, you know, mm-hmm. on the foxes, you know, the old heavy coats in the wintertime. And the men would dress up with hats. And I remember that. And I could get a lot of history from that. And one thing from my youth, which I recall, when Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings wrote The Yearling, mm-hmm. the famous book which won the Pulitzer Prize in 1939, the movie came out in the late 40s mm-hmm. with Gregory Peck and Jane Wyman, and the theaters thought so much about it that they decked the theaters, the lobbies, in a Florida motif. Hanging moss, they had a possum in a cage, they had a raccoon in a cage, they had palmetto bushes in there, just like the big scrub that she wrote about. Mm-hmm. And everybody was decked out in old frontier days. And you walk in the lobby, you thought you were at Cross Creek where she lived.
Oh my.
And you can't get that today.
And that's the theater in Winter Park.
Well, the theater in Winter Park, the Colony.
Wow.
And the theater in Orlando, the Beecham. Oh. Today you've got a multiplex. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got 20 little theaters, nobody talks to anybody, just go in and there you go. And you know, you could never get that today.
Wow.
But they thought so much of her movie after she won the Academy, the Pulitzer Prize. Mm-hmm. They decked the lobby of the theaters in Winter Park in Orlando in a Florida backcountry theme. Literally. You know, you could see a possum in a cage and a raccoon and moss dripping down, you know, and palmetto bushes which were cut up and put mm-hmm. in there as props.
Wow.
So I remember those things.
Wow. Were there, when you were attending school and things, there was some, during the times of segregation and things, mm-hmm. do you right. recall anything as far as when those differences came in? And mm-hmm. like, were there any notable things in the Winter Park area or even Seminole County area that you remember as far as that?
Well, I remember never playing ball against any black boys or African Americans. Mm-hmm. Never. You know, they had their own schools, and it's a shame because they were great athletes. Mm-hmm. I never interacted with them in college, in high school in any manner. We knew where they were, they knew where we were, and we were friendly to them, you know. But I go back and remember the colored restrooms, mm-hmm. where they were marked colored, where the African Americans have to go to certain restrooms. I remember my dad's business, there was the trucking business. Mm-hmm. And he would hire casual labor every day down in Winter Park at Hannibal Square. And we'd go down there and they'd come up to the door of his car and ask what he was paying. And they'd negotiate the pay and then they'd get in the back seat and they'd go for a day's labor. And when I was out on the trucks with him, because I worked on my dad's truck from the time I was 12 years old, mm-hmm. hauling freight, hauling furniture, we'd go to a diner and get something to eat sometimes at lunch, and if we didn't bring our lunch, and the black laborers would have to sit out back, sit on the ground out back, and my dad would order a sandwich for them, and would go through the kitchen, go out the back door, and they'd sit and eat it out back. They weren't allowed in to sit.
And they didn't even really have a dining area?
No, there was no dining area even. Hmm. And we took the bus a lot in those days, from Winter Park to Orlando. I used to go down to Orlando to a bookstore, McVickers, and go down and to theaters down there when I was a small boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, on the bus by myself. Mm-hmm. And if I use colored blacks and African Americans, it's interchangeable because they called themselves those things at various times. Mm-hmm. But they would come on the bus and they'd march right to the back of the bus.
Wow.
And sit, and there was no question about it. And if if one was sitting and a white woman came on, there was no place for her to sit, they were expected to give up their seat.
Wow.
So I was in the terrible segregation days. Grew up in it. It was terrible. And I loathe the fact that it took place. I would have liked to have interacted with them. But I played baseball and sports in high school. We never played against blacks, ever, mm-hmm. that I can ever remember.
Was there, once they made that change, mm-hmm. how did the community react?
Some fought it for a long time because they always wanted to lord something over people. You know, they don't like how people are. Mm-hmm. A lot of people embraced it, were happy about it, and glad it came along. But it was a very begrudging thing. It didn't happen overnight.
Right.
We had Brown versus the Board of Education, the lawsuit, and the legal argument at the Supreme Court. But it just wasn't like turning a light on or off, you know, all of a sudden everything. There was a transition period of several years.
Mm-hmm.
Several years. I remember when I was at Stetson, my senior year, I was in charge of homecoming. And we had a black entertainer come from New York for a homecoming dance and a concert. His name was Roy Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And he was excellent. He wasn't quite as famous as Johnny Mathis in those days. But this is in the late 50s, or about 59 or 60.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in charge of getting him lodging for he and his wife and his bass player and his piano player. And no motel would take him. No motel would take him. And I had to put him up in a couple of houses, mm-hmm. in the black section of DeLand. And this guy was a New York entertainer. He was a RCA Victor recording artist.
Mm-hmm.
He was big. Roy Hamilton back in the 50s and 60s. And I couldn't find lodging for him.
Wow.
And he drove down from New York, and I was so embarrassed. There was no hotel would take him.
Wow.
So to answer your question, it was a long process. It didn't happen overnight.
Wow.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
It is. But it is. Is there any other things like those type of events that you can recall? I mean, I know the history of just this area. You know, they had the freeze and they had the hailstorms and the fires and the hurricanes and things.
Well, hurricanes, yes. I can tell you stories about the hurricanes. The Weather Bureau was so embryonic in its stage, so much of it in its infancy. We didn't have good rapport with the Weather Bureau because they didn't have good rapport with the storms.
Oh.
And we had our radios in the early days before TV.
Mm-hmm.
We had our little Philco radios, you know, and they'd scratch and, you know, you'd barely hear them sometimes. And the indicator of hurricanes was not somebody coming on the TV or the radio to tell you. It was the Australian pines. Australian pines were brought to Florida as a windbreak,
mm-hmm.
and also a windbreak against hurricanes, and also because they look kind of pretty in margins of road and along canals and this kind of thing. My dad had Australian pines on our property. Yeah, our warehouses were next to our home because we lived in a rural part of town. And the Australian pines would whoosh, and you'd hear them make a sound that was different
huh.
than just a little storm. The hurricane sound was unmistakable. Mm-hmm. It was a wail, an actual wail. And we'd hear it, and then we'd say, well, there must be a storm coming. And a lot of times, it'd be a hurricane. It wouldn't be just a storm. And this is the late 40s, mm-hmm. 1940s and early 50s. And I can remember some terrible storms that came through Orlando.
Wow.
Rowboats on our street, you know, and the water off, the lights off for days. And but the early warning for hurricanes was so backward, mm-hmm. because we didn't have the technology for it. And we'd miss school all the time. And it would rain for days when the storms were around. And I remember just distinctly storms in the late 40s and early 50s that were rough, that came through here. Trees down and power out. But we had no notice.
Right.
It wasn't like the hurricanes in 26 in Miami and 28 that came across Lake Okeechobee. Mm-hmm. When they were there, you knew they were there, but not any notice. And even in the 40s and 50s, we had almost no notice of hurricanes.
Wow. Wow. It kind of makes you wonder what we would do without these things.
Exactly.
Nowadays, you know.
Exactly.
You were saying earlier, too, that you your father ran a trucking business.
My dad had a trucking business, and it's a great story there. He bought an old truck, a 1934 Ford, in New Jersey, where mm-hmm. we had our farm. He was in the Coast Guard and also farmed by night. He would farm with the lights on and the tractor. He'd farm at night because we was trying to make a living, and my mother would take the produce and sell it downtown mm-hmm. in an old Pontiac car with a running board, and my sister and I were 3-4 years old, and we'd go with her. He bought this truck to transport our belongings from the farmhouse to Florida. Mm-hmm. So my mother inherited this property out near Rock Springs, out near Apopka.
Oh, okay.
And he had money from the sale of the farm, and he built our house that summer. The war was over that summer. Mm-hmm. And the goods coming in, like keg of nails to use to build a house and wood and things, were slow. My dad had never built a house. My dad was afraid of nothing. He built a house and not knowing how to do it. He built it. The footers, the concrete block foundation, the rafters, he just built it with the help of two men from town. And he had a little money from the sale of the farm mm-hmm. the summer. And by fall, the money was low. They had no job. The house was up. We were in the house. So he took the truck down to the railroad station when the Rollins co-eds were coming in for the year. And in those days, almost nobody drove a car to college. You took the train, literally.
Oh, okay.
And Rollins was a fancy, expensive school, even in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And he met somebody down in Winter Park, and he said, I need a job. I've been here all summer. I built our house. We're in our house. I need a job now. He said, I got that truck. And the man said, why don't you go down to the train station and go up and down through the cars when they stop, tell them you'll haul trunks to the college, to the dormitories. He said, the taxi cabs have been doing it for years.
Oh.
So my father took his truck down there, and he, in competition with the taxi cab drivers, he walked up and down the train saying, we've got a truck outside to haul your trunk. So he started hauling trunks to the college for about 10 days until everybody was down and everybody at school was in session. Then he was out of work because he'd worked for 10 days, so he ran an ad in the paper in mm-hmm. Winter Park. The ad caption was, we will move anything. And he put it in the paper with a phone number, four digits. That's mm-hmm. You could talk to the operator. In those days. This is right after World War II. And he set up in the moving business. And he was in the moving business 28 years.
Wow.
Trucks and warehouses, and that's how it started.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He had a truck and no job. And he put the truck to work.
Wow. And your mom, did she stay home?
She stayed home and ran the office. Mm-hmm. And he was, in the early years, he was out on the truck hauling with everybody else. And then he graduated to giving estimates and behind the scenes as he got older and as his business grew and mm-hmm. flourished.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really cool story.
I think so.
So, well, I mean, is there anything that you would like to discuss that I haven't really brought up?
Well, yes, I guess. Let's see. I was very fortunate in living as a young boy and young man through probably as wonderful a time in Florida history as there could be. That was from the end of World War II until the early 60s, when the riots started and all the gnashing of teeth in the Vietnam War. There was about 15, 18 years in there that were just marvelous. And it was all my grammar school years, my high school years, my college years. It was just a remarkable place to grow up. It was remarkable. I would ride my bicycle. You are not going to believe this. 9 and 10 years old, I'd ride my bicycle 2.5 miles to downtown Winter Park, go to the police station and say I was going to lock it in one of their little racks where they look after it. I'm telling you the truth. But I was taking the bus to Orlando for the day. And I would get on the bus at age 9 or 10 by myself. You know, you never thought about bad people because you never heard of them.
Right.
And I would go to Orlando on the old bus, go to McVicker's bookstore and buy a Hardy's Boys book. They were popular then. Go to a Saturday matinee and see Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and eat popcorn and a Coke. Spend all day in Orlando. Go by the Cub Scout Den at Yale Drew Ivy's, a great department store, and look for the next badge I was going to get or a new Cub hat or whatever. And come back in the afternoons after being in Orlando for 6-7 hours. Claim my bicycle from the police rack, unlock the thing that locked it, and ride home at night and be gone all day.
Wow.
9, 10 years old. I'm telling you the truth. Nobody thought a thing about it.
Wow.
Today,
you
couldn't even... I was in grammar school when I did this. I remember going once when I was 11 years old to Orlando with a $10 bill for Christmas presents. And I bought my dad a fishing lure at Denmark's Sporting Goods store, which was a landmark. Denmark's. I went to Yale Drew Ivy's, the big department store, and bought my sister a little gift, like a Nancy Drew book. Because Nancy Drew was like Hardy Boys. Nancy Drew was for girls and Hardy Boys were for boys. And I went over to Dixon Ives, went up the floor in an elevator, and bought my mother a nice handkerchief. And I had lunch down there. I had bought a gift for my sister, my father, my mother, and went to the movies and came home. I still had change from the $10 bill.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember, and I was about 10 or 11 years old.
Wow.
And I wasn't that I was particularly brave or anything. It's just that you didn't have any worries.
Right.
Nobody accosted you or anything, and there's never any trouble. I'd go to Orlando alone for the day.
Wow. I don't even go to Orlando alone right now.
Exactly.
So, well, you'd mentioned, too, that you had served some time in the Army.
Yes.
Did you serve in the war?
No, I'm not particularly proud of that, but it wasn't my fault. I had the wrong age. I was too young for Korea and too old for Vietnam.
Oh.
Now, I would have been old enough for Vietnam, but I was married by then, had a child by then, and I didn't go. But I signed in the reserves when I was in high school. And I went to reserve meetings when I was a junior in high school and senior. And that's pretty young to be out there soldiering with men. I was only 16. And then I went in the active duty after high school and got out. And we only went 6 months to active duty. And we were in reserve 7.5 years. And I was going to go to Davidson College in North Carolina because some friends went and I was accepted there. I came back in January after 6 months in the service from June to January. And some friends talked me into going to Stetson for just a semester. Just go to, because if I didn't go to school, I was going to be on my dad's trucks.
Right.
Hauling furniture, I promise you. Because I hated to go home on the weekends from college because I'm going to be on this truck working. So I decided, I said, going to college is better than working on dad's trucks. So I went to Stetson and liked it and never went to Davidson. I went on through Stetson the whole time. But that's how that worked out.
Wow.
But we used to, I could get, when I finally got a car at Stetson, I could get a tank of gas a week if I'd come home and see Mom and Dad. It was only 34 miles from the land of Winter Park. And I would run the gas down to near the E mark because I knew how far it was. And it was a Pure station in our neighborhood, an old Pure station. And I could get a tank of gas, and of course I always brought all my dirty linens home in a big duffel bag for Mother, you know. And I would time it. One time, I got down to Castleberry, and I thought that I was going to run out of gas. And I pumped 9 cents. 9 cents of gas. And the gasoline was about 32 cents a gallon. And I got enough to get me home.
Oh, my goodness.
9 cents.
Oh, my goodness.
But those are the, you know. People older, 100 years old, remember the early 1900s, which is even more archaic than what I'm talking about. But you asked me what I remember. That from the end of World War II until the Vietnam War, America was at its zenith, its power, its influence. It was peacetime, and it was a marvelous time to grow up in Florida. Florida was booming. The tourism was starting. The Martin Company came to Orlando. The Cape was starting to make some rumbles, and Orlando was really growing. I know in my graduating class, and my sisters, we were about the same size. And the year before me, 56, 57, 58, were all about the same. 2 and 3 years later, the class size had doubled.
Wow.
Because of the Martin Company and all the allied aerospace companies, people were flooding into Florida in the late 50s and early 60s. But it was a great place to grow up. I miss it. Mm-hmm. It's gone. It's gone.
Wow. I can understand that. Do you remember when they first built Disney?
Oh, yes. I remember BD, before Disney.
Oh.
Oh, I do, I do. And I went in the brokerage business and met a man who made a lot of money by being on the inside looking out and bought land as a speculator. He ran a service station in Beverly Hills, and he owned it. He was blue-collar, but he owned it, and all the stars would gas up there. And he flew an aircraft along with a couple of his buddies. They had a little Piper Cub group. And the word was that Disney was coming east. They had Disneyland, but they were coming east, and they thought it was going to be St. Louis. It proved not to be St. Louis because Mr. Bush from Bush, Anheuser-Busch, heard that they weren't going to serve beer, and he said something at a big gala unveiling. You can't come to St. Louis and not sell beer, and Walt Disney didn't like that, so St. Louis was crossed off. The next option was either Ocala or Orlando. So this man from California that owned an old Standard Oil station, gas station, he was a thousandaire. He wasn't a millionaire. He knew some of the stars. And they leaked that this area might be it. So he and three of his buddies took a month off, flew Piper Cubs to Orlando, executive airport, the old airport, checked into to a motel, hired Kelly girls to post themselves at the various county seats, Kissimmee, Tavares, Sanford, Orlando, to see if anything unusual was being recorded, any deeds or anything. They ate four meals a day, trying to hear scuttlebutt. They got their hair cut every week, and they needed it or not. They got their shoe shined. They wanted to be where scuttlebutt was, where gossip was, because they were trying to bankroll the buying of land if Disney was going to buy in Orlando.
Wow.
They'd meet every night and confer. How'd your day go? Where'd you go? Well, I ate four meals. I was in restaurants and listen. And they moved the Kelly girls around every day. The girl that was in Orlando would be in Sanford. And then the next day she'd be in Tavares, so she wouldn't be suspicious. And they had a map they put across their bed in the motels there. And they said, where were you? And it was like a war. They were trying to find out if Disney was coming here. So their money was gone. This is a true story. He gave this story in my living room. I did business with him. He's dead now. I shouldn't use his name. The money was up, and they were, darn it, we didn't find it. It wasn't nothing, because it was really, only three people in town knew it.
Right.
The man in charge of the Sentinel, the man in charge of First National Bank of Orlando. I mean, it was like keeping the A-bomb secret. It really, because Disney knew the prices would escalate.
Wow.
So here's the story, and it's true. They checked out of their motel rooms. They got their planes at Orlando Executive Airport, and they had flown during the month around to see what they could see from the air, too. They flew out to present Lake Buena Vista that had a windsock little airstrip there owned by a family, kind of a mom-and-pop business. A little windsock, you know, and a Piper Cubs would land, a place to gas up. So they landed there to gas up. It was a two-day flight to California. They would fly into Texas and then on to California. Little Piper Cubs, they'd go about 120 miles an hour tops.
Right.
There was an old boy there at the little airstrip with an old cracker hat on, a piece of straw in his mouth, you know, and he was making conversation with them. And they were glum because they were there and had spent a month's salary and nothing. And this guy, and this is a true story, he told it in my living room, and everybody, you hear a pin drop. This guy said, what's going on around here? Mr. Brown down here, he's got his farm for sale. Mr. Smith down here, he's under option with some other people. And Mr. Miller down here, he's selling out too. And Mr. C, I'll call him Mr. C, because he's gone, protecting. He said, oh really? Oh, really? The people around here optioning their farms and say, oh, really? Is that? Yeah, we don't know what's going on. It's crazy over here right now. Well, it was in Bay Lake, right where it was. And they'd come in and made some deals with farmers under the rug. And so Mr. C and his buddies got back in their airplanes, went back to the motel, which was on Colonial Drive across from a place called Ronnie's Restaurant, which was famous. Mm-hmm. Checked back in the motel and redoubled their efforts and found it.
Oh, my goodness.
And they begged, borrowed, and stole every buck they could from California, their friends, their relatives. And in 2 short years, they were all multimillionaires.
Wow.
The guy at the gas up station at the little family-owned airstrip stole the beans.
Wow.
Now, that's a true story. And isn't that a great story?
That's funny.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's a...
It's great that, I mean, that's how you find out stuff, though. It might not be in the middle of the city. It might just be...
That's right. I mean, they had Kelly girls they hired. They were everywhere, you know, listening in the corridors of courthouses. They were eating formula. All of them got fat, he said, because they were going in every restaurant, every diner, trying to sit and hear something, you know. They got their shoes shined when they glistened, you know. They got their hair cut too often. They just wanted to be places to get gossip.
Right.
Because they're trying to bankroll big money.
Right.
30 days, nothing. They leave town, they gas up, and the guy at the place spills the beans.
Wow.
And he said it was the greatest thing he'd ever heard. He said, oh, really? Mr. Smith and Mr. Brown? That probably was not the names he used, you know. It was somebody that was selling out to Disney.
Right.
And this was all prior to the announcement. So they went back and said, we found it. And it was Bay Lake, and they found it.
Wow.
And they searched it 30 days and couldn't find it.
Well, now, did it really help the area? I mean, of course, initially it brought in a lot of income
I'm an environmentalist. Mm-hmm. You know, my books have that theme. I love nature. I love the outdoors. And, yes, it's done a lot of good, but I like the old Florida. I write about the old Florida. Mm-hmm. The back country roads, the way it was, you know, the animals, and not that they had to run loose because we had a cattle fencing law, but I guess it's helped. If you're on I-4 in gridlock, you know, and a tractor trailer's across the way and you're 2 hours late for an appointment, you're not liking it.
Right.
There was no turning back once Disney came. It was just, it was frantic. Mm-hmm. It was the most frantic thing I'd ever seen.
Wow.
The people coming in here with jobs and the growth, it was just unbelievable. I like the old part. I like the old days.
Wow.
But that story about Mr. C is a true story. I did business with him, and we had him out to the house one night for beer and popcorn. I had some of my friends over, about 10 of us, maybe a little more, and we all sat around and listened to him tell that story.
Wow.
And that's just a fantastic story.
It's hard to imagine what Florida would be like without that aspect of it.
Well,
especially Central Florida.
it would have grown despite Disney. Mm-hmm. It was growing early. The Cape, the aerospace industry really took off after the war, mm-hmm. and in the early 50s. It would have grown without Disney. People had pensions. They had retirements for the first time. And up north, they were people wanting to get out of the cold. So it had started to grow long before Disney, but not at the rate that Disney brought.
Right.
After that. When they came, it was much different than it would have been. It would have been a gradual increase. It wouldn't be like it is today, but it still would have been a very big state. So we can't blame Disney totally.
No. Well, if you don't have anything else.
Stephanie, I think this has been fun and enjoyable, and to learn that you came from the Okeechobee area, which I know also, and mm-hmm. went to college with many people from the towns around Lake Okeechobee, LaBelle also, and down there. And I've so enjoyed being interviewed by you today.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Thank you. Yeah.